have we all agreed on what strong drink is for? I hope we got all that straight. Heavy heart. You have a conscience between you and God. And what you do can't be with a clear conscience if it will cause someone else to stumble. So we just keep it in perspective there, okay? But you can't teach that the Bible says that drinking wine or whatever is a sin, okay? And we've pretty well talked about that. All right. I'm on letter B at the top of page 4 in our outline.
So far as I know, we're the only ones on the planet so far that have taught that it's not.
Okay. Well, that makes us unique, doesn't it? He was also warned against perversion of judgment. He's admonished to speak on behalf of those who cannot speak for themselves. Let's read that. Starting in verse 8, these are the words of his mother. Open your mouth for the dumb in the cause of all such as are appointed to destruction. I'm going to read that out of another translation. It says speechless. The ones who can't speak for themselves. Let's find it in here. This is the one, the New King James. Open your mouth for the speechless in the cause of all who are appointed to die. Open your mouth, judge righteously, and plead the cause of the poor and needy. That's 31:8 and 31:9. And this is what his mother tells him to do. So it says Solomon's instructed to speak personally on behalf of those who can't speak for themselves. He's told to act as an umpire for those who cannot help themselves. And he's also instructed to give righteous judgment. Now, again, I'm going to say something. I think it's very interesting that he is told in verse 9 to plead the cause of the poor and the needy. This word poor means literally depressed, okay? The depressed. It's not talking about necessarily finances, although it could include that. It says literally depressed, literally in mind or circumstance. So she says, you speak for those people. Take the cause of those. Open your mouth. As a leader, open your mouth for those who are afflicted, for those who are depressed in mind or circumstances. And then she says, to act as an umpire for the needy. And this word needy means to want, especially in feeling. To be wanting, especially in feeling, or to be destitute. So she's saying, you look out for those who can't help themselves. Do you think that's good counsel for a leader? Take care of those and judge them rightly, those who can't take care of themselves. I think it's especially interesting that those two words are used because further down, when we read about the attributes of the virtuous wife or the virtuous woman, it says, look in verse 20, she stretches out her hand to the poor. Very same word, identical. And she reaches forth her hand to the needy. Exactly the same word, which to me is just another good validity to the statement that we made in the beginning. Their purposes are compatible. She is about doing the very thing that his mother told him was going to be so important for him to do as a leader. Do you see how a person who has the accountability and the responsibility of leadership, as Solomon does here, as king, or anyone in a position of leadership, who's told to reach out to the poor and the needy, you know, spend your life as a public servant on behalf of those who can't look out for themselves. Do you see why it would be so important for him to have a mate compatible to that purpose, whose heart is already toward those very kinds of people, the poor and the needy? What if he had a mate who said, well, what about me? you're always doing something for the poor and the needy. What about me? Am I chopped liver or something? I mean, don't I count? No, she's so busy doing for the poor and the needy that she's compatible to his purpose. That's what, it's a heart thing. It's, that's what I'm trying to say. They are alike in spirit. The counsel that he's giving, that he's being given, is would exactly link up with the kind of woman that his mother is telling him to pursue, which is exactly the opposite of what he did pursue. But do you see how his purpose could have been? Remember that crown that enhances and calls attention to the authority or the head, the leader? Do you see how the compatibility of the virtuous woman could have assisted him along those lines instead of undermining all that and pulling him and distracting him in the ways that that his foreign wives did? Kenny, you have a... Yeah, and we already talked about that. That's a good point. It's not just a virtuous woman, okay? His mother says to him, don't give your same word, strength, virtue, to women. Don't be distracted and let them pull that out of you. And here's another thing about that, too. You know, if we're really serving as leaders, then the needs of the people are going to take everything we've got. How wonderful to go to a refuge who can put that back in, because she has it too, you see. So I don't think it's by accident that the same word virtue is used. Don't give away your virtue. Don't sell yourself short. Find the woman of virtue. Reach out to the poor and needy. Find the woman who's reaching out to the poor and needy. You think about what Rebecca was doing when that servant came to that well. Think about the qualifications that he said. Let her be the one who goes above and beyond. Not only takes care of me, but the animals as well that have served me. The one who goes, who excels in service. It's almost imperative that a leader have that kind of support. Otherwise, there's going to be problems in the marriage, because if the one or the other, and it's not just men either, okay? One or the other is insecure in that or doesn't have that heart to reach out with the same purpose and compatibility of call, then there are going to be problems, because somebody's going to feel that they got the short end of the stick. Okay? All right, we'll talk about that more as we go on. So the last thing there, the last two things under her instruction. One's private life has a direct influence upon his public life, and a leader must be a man of integrity, or woman, both privately and publicly. Okay? Now let's look at the attributes of a virtuous woman, which is what we usually think about when we think of Proverbs 31. And there's so much here. I think what I want to do is read down the list just the way we have it on the outline. And then I want us to come back verse by verse, okay? And just begin to look at this lady in the context of the world that she imparts to. It says on page 4, listed below are the attributes or the characteristics of a virtuous woman as found in Proverbs 31. So let's see what it says that she is, and then verse by verse we'll go through it and take a look. She's trustworthy. She does good to her husband, not evil. She's not idle, but she works willingly. She demonstrates thriftiness. She's self-motivated and considerate. She's proficient in business. And under that, she shows or uses good judgment. She makes wise investments. She invests her return. And then number 7, she's healthy, strong, and tireless. She evaluates her actions and is cautious not to become self-contented and relaxed. She's efficient. She's skillful, demonstrating initiative. She's not lazy. She's charitable, benevolent, generous, merciful, confident, and fearless. She takes pride in her physical appearance. She does not allow her obligations and her endeavors to affect her physical appearance or makes no excuses for that. She understands the importance of keeping herself attractive while doing all the other things for her household. Her husband is referred to toward the end of this proverb, and it talks about the fact that he's known in the gates or respected among the elders. Why, we're going to look at why is her husband known and why is he mentioned here. And then that women can make their husbands look either good or bad. She's prosperous as a result of good business transactions. She clothes herself from the inside out, bringing dignity, strength, and joy to herself. She speaks with wisdom and kindness. She constantly looks after her household and does not partake of unprofitableness or laziness. She earns the respect and praise of her husband and her children. She's not content with being average, therefore she excels. She's to be praised for her fear of the Lord rather than her beauty and her grace. Beauty is deceitful and fleeting. Praise should be given for what one does and what one is, not for who one is. And credit is to be given where credit is due. The virtuous woman of Proverbs 31 is very uncommon. She's a rare find, a rare treasure, yet very needful. Her diligence and her determination cause her to excel beyond her peers. Now, with that as an overview, let's go verse by verse and take a look at this woman and some other scriptures that we're going to pull in as well. And before we start with this, I'd just like to say and reiterate something that I said when we started. This is not about who makes the best potato salad at church. What is it? Something you need to say? Okay. Or, you going to say that? All right. Something between Kenny and Debbie. Or who's the best housekeeper? Or who excels in whatever that she does? It's not about so much the things she does, although she does, she's a very active woman. She does a whole lot of things that we can look at. But the things that she does are simply outward workings of who she is on the inside. It's because of who she is, the qualities that are inside of her, that she does what she does on the outside. Okay? And that's what we want to look at. So we said we would take down our Martha Stewart lives here sign because it's not about that. And we can't be superwoman, okay? But we can be virtuous woman. And there is a difference. Because I need to be who God made me to be. So I'm not setting her up at some standard saying, I have to start weaving my own cloth now, making my own clothes so that I can be a virtuous woman. That's not the point. The point is she's clothed from the inside out with strength and dignity. You can't go downtown and buy those clothes. Okay? So are you with me? It's not so much, you know, she's wonderful. I mean, the things that she's able to accomplish are amazing. But it's not so much about that. You may not accomplish everything she does, but you may accomplish some things that aren't listed here. Okay? There may be things you do that aren't even mentioned here. There were some things with Ruth that we looked at that you can't find right here. But yet, she's called a virtuous woman.
This woman really is working hard.
She's a hard worker.
She's making stuff for her and her family and also taking to the merchants to sell.
Exactly.
Profit business on the side.
She just about does it all. In one proverb here. That's exactly right. Well, she's certainly worth looking at, okay, and aspiring toward, or she wouldn't be in here. Let's take a closer look. Starting in verse 10, who can find a virtuous woman? Now, we remember what the word virtuous means because Howard's going to tell us again. What is virtuous? Okay, the word is force, strong in mind and body. For her price is far above rubies. And I wanted to read some other scriptures you remember when we started, we talked about the connection between wisdom and this woman, the fact that she operates in wisdom, she speaks with wisdom, and some of the ways that that wisdom is personified in the Scriptures as a woman. I think those ways and those works, the things that wisdom is personified as doing, fit this woman. So let's look in Job, first of all, 28. Starting in verse 12. When you think of this woman, you'll think of wisdom. Who can find a virtuous woman? Okay? Well, where shall wisdom be found? Let's read this. And where is the place of understanding? Man knoweth not the price thereof, neither is it found in the land of the living. The depth saith, it is not in me, and the sea saith, it is not with me. It cannot be gotten for gold, neither shall silver be weighed for the price thereof. It cannot be valued with the gold of Ophir, with the precious onyx or the sapphire. The gold and the crystal cannot equal it, and the exchange of it shall not be for jewels of fine gold. No mention shall be made of coral or of pearls, for the price of wisdom is above rubies. And then it goes on to mention the topaz of Ethiopia shall not equal it, neither shall it be valued with pure gold. Whence then cometh wisdom? Where can you find it? Where does it come from? And where is the place of understanding? Seeing it is hid from the eyes of all living and kept close from the fowls of the air. Destruction and death say, we have heard the fame thereof with our ears. God understandeth the way thereof, and he knoweth the place thereof. Where can you find a virtuous woman? Who knows where she is?
Only
God knows where she is. For he looketh to the ends of the earth and seeth under the whole heaven to make the weight for the winds, and he weigheth the waters by measure. When he made a decree for the rain and a way for the lightning of the thunder, then did he see it and declare it. He prepared it, yea, and searched it out. And unto man he said, behold, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom. And to depart from evil is understanding. Now let's see if we don't think this woman qualifies as we read on about her. Who can find a virtuous woman? For her price or her value is far above rubies. That's the very same thing that was said about wisdom. Now look in Proverbs 3 with me. Starting in verse 13. Happy is the man that finds wisdom, and the man that gets understanding. For the merchandise of it is better than the merchandise of silver, and the gain thereof than fine gold. She is more precious than rubies. Again, that very same comparison that is used in the virtuous woman. And all the things thou canst desire are not to be compared to her. Length of days is in her right hand, and in her left hand riches and honor. Her ways are ways of pleasantness, and all her paths are peace. She is a tree of life to them that lay hold upon her, and happy is everyone that retaineth her. And then Proverbs 8:11. For wisdom is better than rubies, just like the virtuous woman is. And all the things that may be desired are not to be compared to it. So as wisdom is a crown, so the virtuous woman is a crown to her husband. And moves in wisdom throughout these scriptures that we're going to study as we look at her. She's the personification of wisdom in the things that she does. Who can find a virtuous woman? For her price is far above rubies. The heart of her husband doth safely trust in her, so that he shall have no need of spoil. She will do him good and not evil, all the days of her life. In other words, she's predictably constant or consistent, doing him good. And that good, when you look it up, is good in the broadest sense of the word. Not evil. All the days of her life. You remember when we started the class tonight, we said that her virtue is not contingent upon the virtue of her husband. Now, in this particular context, her husband is known in the gates. He's a leader. He sits among the elders. And he's in a position of authority, which is supported by the person that she is. But all you have to do is look at Abigail to see that a woman of virtue is a woman of virtue from the inside out, regardless of her circumstances. And even though Abigail is aware of the person, the type of person she's married to, very much so, you don't hear her belittle or, you know, she does say what he is, but she doesn't do him harm. She's done him good. She's been accessible to his servants. She saves his life in 2 Samuel. So what I'm saying is, regardless of who he is or what he does, she, the virtuous wife, will do him good all the days of her life, period. It doesn't say if he deserves it, does it? It just says she will. That's a choice she makes, regardless of the choices he makes. Okay? She seeketh wool and flax and worketh willingly with her hands. Now, again, I say, this does not mean that you have to go out and start, you know, making your own fabric again or making your own clothes. It really doesn't have anything. It's the willingness. It's that inside quality. She works willingly with her hands. And this whole, you know, a lot of what we could say here has to do with the things she pursues and the diligence with which she pursues them. Now, I want to go back to something just a minute before we talk about the things that she does with her hands. This thing about doing her husband good, that can be private and public too. Okay? Just like the leadership role of the man that we were instructed about, can his private life affect his public life? Well, that's true with a husband and wife too. And she doesn't just do him good in front of other people. She does him good privately as well. In other words, she would never do anything to hurt him, whether it was in front of anybody else or in private. There's some scriptures that I want to read along with that. One is in Proverbs 12:18. Now let's go back there just a minute. That's an excellent point. There is that, speaketh like the piercings of a sword, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later. But the tongue of the wise is health. You know, we read in Proverbs that the power of death and life is in our tongue, right? What are the things that we're saying? What things do we say to our husbands and about our husbands? In front of, what do we speak over our husbands? Privately and publicly. You know, you listen to the conversations of most women and what they say about their husbands to other people. And you think, you know, if she talks like that with all of us listening, wonder what she's like to live with at home when nobody's listening but her husband. I'm telling you that the power of our words can make or break our mate. We can do them good or evil. Just by the, not just the things that we say, I mean do, but the things that we say as well. And we're accountable for that. And then in Proverbs 14:1, and I think we talked about this earlier, it says that every wise woman, and I am again emphasizing the parallel between this virtuous woman and wisdom or the wise woman, Proverbs 14:1, Every wise woman builds her house. She's in the process of constructing. Okay? But the foolish plucketh it down with her hands. The things she does, and I add the things that she says. But not the virtuous woman. She builds her husband. Her tongue is health to him. And if he was the meanest thing in the whole wide world, you'd never know it. Because that's not what she'd say. Pardon? She will do him good and not evil all the days of her life. She seeketh wool and flax and worketh willingly with her hands. And again, the word willingly. You think about the servant's heart that Ruth had when we studied that book, and how willing she was to go and do for Naomi. It was her willingness and her diligence that gave her the reputation that she had before Boaz and the other people as well. She's like the merchant ship. She bringeth forth her food from afar. Where's that other? No, I'm going to read it out of here just a little bit, because some of this may be easier. Okay, verse 14. Pretty much the same. She's like the merchant's ships. She brings her food from afar. You think that means she goes out and gets it and brings it home? Why are you laughing, Kenny? How far? She burns the biscuit. Okay. All right, that's okay. You have no idea how hard you make it on somebody who's standing right beside you. When you think of merchant ships, what do you think of?
Commercial ship that brings in supplies.
That might not be available just readily at hand, but I see an effort here, and maybe even a variety of things that she brings and wants to do for her household. Now, love this verse. It says, she rises also while it is yet night. Now, this isn't the one. It's a little bit further on, but it has to do with this same thing. And gives meat to her household and a portion to her maidens. In other words, she's a woman of preparation. She takes care of those for whom she is responsible. Now, in doing that, can you see? There is a whole lot going on in this class besides what's going on up here. But I'm trusting that it's all in the right spirit, okay?
I was just looking for a different translation on that.
Okay, what'd you get? Okay. It says it in that one too. I think that speaks of the effort to provide. In other words, things aren't always convenient, are they? And yet there's an effort to do that, to bring and make provision for a household. And rising while it is yet night means that she gets up early in order to take care of. And you see how it says she gives meat to her household and a portion to her maidens, those for whom she's responsible? Then don't you think that she would have a better understanding of why it's necessary for her husband to do the things that he does for those whom, for whom he is responsible? When you have a servant's heart and you realize your accountability and your responsibility to meet the needs that, you know, over those that you have rule or leadership, then it's easier to support that in your mate.
That takes one less responsibility off
of him.
Yeah.
That's right.
It looks to me like in this right here that the virtuous woman takes care of the entire household. The man don't have to worry about that.
Well, he's not worried about it. He's sitting with the elders in the gate in this scripture. That's exactly right. You see, her realm of influence. It's like he provides for the household, but she provides in the household. Okay? And her realm of responsibility and the way that she assumes that position and the excellence in which she handles those things, those attributes free him to go and do and be what it is that he's called to be. She's not the least bit insecure or demanding, not one bit. And as David said earlier, she's so busy. And I don't mean just busy for the sake of busyness, but she's so involved in doing those things for her household and for others outside her household as well, that she doesn't have time to be self-focused. She's self-motivated. He's not standing over her saying, well, you got to do this, and you know, here's your honey-do list for the day. You need to do this, and you need to do that, and let me tell you something. No, he doesn't have to do that with this woman. He trusts her, and he's able to, because look what she's doing while he's gone. But it's her determination to fulfill her role in excellence. Now, I didn't say she's perfect, okay? I said she's determined to do it in excellence. I know she does. But it's that determination within the inside of her and foster his being able to do or fulfill what it is that he's called to do. Now, whether he does that or whether he doesn't shouldn't change her. It's like she does everything within her power to promote his success, but she doesn't demand that he be successful. Okay? It's like that's his business and his choice.
Just as he don't give her a honey-do list, but she does it anyway.
Right. Why would she do that? You see, when we have to control by externals, it's just like what we've learned about the law versus the heart. If we only do it because we know somebody's watching and going to check up on us, and there are people who live their lives that way, giving an account of every day, husbands and wives. And what that really boils down to is, you know, you tell me, give an account for yourself this day. What have you done? Says, I don't trust you. And if I've done a good job at what I've done, then eventually it'll be pretty obvious what I've been doing, won't it? And if not, that's between me and God anyway, because you can't fix me from the outside. And we talked about security, and we'll hit on this a little bit more, but I have literally been in a car sitting outside a school with the wife of a principal who held the horn down until he came out the door because it was time for him to come home. Period. And he came out the door.
And went home.
And went home. By the same token, I've been in the office of a principal who was a lady whose husband came to the school and said, it's time for you to be finished. And this was her first day in a new school, in a community they don't live in the school that's struggling more than any school in the county. And he came and said, I'm here to get you. It's time for you to be finished. And I watched to see how that was handled. And she said, I'm not finished with what I need to do for the day. Now, you can either wait here for me, or you can go do something constructive and come back in a couple of hours, and I'll be finished then, which is what he chose to do. But, you know, a secure person doesn't put those kind of limitations on a person in leadership. Because what that says is, I don't care what you think you're called to do or what you're responsible for. I said it's time to come home. Well, then home's not a place I want to be very much. That is usually what happens. That's exactly what happens. And what I'm telling you is, if we're secure in who we are, I have plenty to do just to be who God wants me to be today. That I don't have to, you know, I don't need an itinerary from Pat as to what he did today. I'll do well to be able to support him at home so that he's liberated to go do what it is that he does. I don't have time to check up on him. And what good would that do me anyway? You see, we don't control people from the outside. We might think we do, but they're standing up on the inside even if we're making them sit down on the outside. It's not working. But there's none of that with the virtuous woman. You don't even, you know, you don't hear a thing about her husband till further on over, and that's what where he's out doing what he's called to do, and he's praising her. But I'm telling you, he's free to do that because of what she's doing right here. Okay? Comments?
Well, yeah,
go ahead. No, go ahead.
I mean, I know a couple very, very personally, and the wife is wanting to know why lately her husband, who owns his own business in Charlotte, a big business, even on Sunday, you know, instead of at home watching the game or whatever, he will go to the shop and sweep up and stay at the shop. I mean, he's staying away. He's choosing, obviously, to stay away from her in the home that he's working to pay for to build over there, you know. But he's never there. And it's obvious that he's not actually working on the business on Sunday. That he's there and he's sweeping up and he's spending all day every Sunday and, you know, extra time that you would normally spend with the family over there. And the wife is asking other people, you know, why would he be doing that? Why wouldn't he, you know, want to be home with me and that kind of thing? And probably she should be asking herself. I mean, they don't know.
Well, I'm afraid they're going to give her a lot of information. But, you know, I know your point is exactly right. Why would you run to the very people
if I came home
who can destroy you?
You know, you were talking about the woven work and the clothes.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you know, also women are known, you know, for like stitching and stuff. Mm-hmm. I love it when I go in a home and on the wall is like a cross stitch that, you know, took a lot of time. And it'll have some Bible verse and some birds on it or something, you know, like, unless the Lord built a house, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you come in, you see things like that, and you think, man, what a pleasant, nice place to be, you know, and it's just obvious, you know, that she cares about that home and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I go into someone else's home and I see those things, and it just pushes buttons in on the inside of me and just makes me think, you know, how fortunate they are, you know, at the end of the day, to come home to something like this, a place like this,
mm-hmm.
where so much care and love and everything has gone into even that. And it just does something to you.
Well, don't you think that if that's in your heart, David, and God knows that, that he's designed, see, I believe that he's designed that person, that suitable helper. I really do. And if he knows those things about you, then he's the one you need to go to find what you need to find, who you need to find. Because he knows the one who cares about those types of things, too.
A good verse for that lady right there.
That lady.
The virtuous woman,
uh-huh.
And how she does everything,
mm-hmm.
is found in Ephesians, the 6th chapter, when it tells about servants. You said that her itinerary, you know, was something that she had. And I think that whether you're a husband or whether you're a wife, you're still a servant. But Ephesians, the sixth chapter, speaks to that. And it, and I've used it many times in the business when somebody come and talk about this, this, and this. I said, let me tell you something. You profess to be a Christian here. Ephesians 6, about the 4th, 5th, 6th verse there, says, you don't work like you're working for men. Work as though you're working for Jesus
as unto
Christ
the Lord,
and pleasing unto Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems to me like she's got that down pat. She's not. She is working to please Jesus.
That's right.
And consequently, when you work to please Jesus, your mate should be the happiest person in the world.
Should benefit.
I mean, really, they are that investment.
Yeah.
I'll never forget the black guy. I heard a black guy preach one time in a time of turmoil for me at the assembly over here. A little old young whippersnapper. I'll never forget what he said. He said, people around me get the splash of or spill of Jesus Christ. And you got a virtuous woman like that, you just get the spill over, and vice versa. You can be as low as go with dirt, you know, sorry as go with dirt. And if you're doing, if you've got a mate that's doing right, you get the blessings of the spill over from that mate.
That's right. That's exactly right.
With St. Hogan, if you got a mate doing wrong, you get spill over.
Appreciate you sharing.
It is so that we do. You know, we have the privilege to set an atmosphere for one another in the home. I mean, it's not my home. It's our home. And Pat's is responsible for the atmosphere in there as I am. What he brings in or brings up, and what I bring in or bring up, that makes all the difference. You know, we both go out to fields and labor, as you do. Probably most of you do. And when you labor among other people who have needs, then they pull on the virtue that's in you. They pull on your strength. I work with children, I work with teachers, and they draw day after day after day. And nothing pleases me more than that. I love that. But then I need to be refilled. And I know I lean on the Lord for that. But I need the strength, you know, that my husband can bring to me. And by the same token, he needs that which I have to give. So it's like a mutual building up instead of what so often goes on, and that is where one or the other or both are constantly tearing down at each other. Y'all, it doesn't take a lifetime to pull down a home. It doesn't take that long. It takes a lifetime to build one.
Yeah.
But it can be pulled down pretty quickly if the things from our mouth that represent the things that are in our heart are contrary, you know, to what God says about us, then we're able to pull them down. And it's not that hard a task. But the hard thing is to build them up and to sustain them. But it's also the most rewarding thing, because that's the way God's designed it to be. So it's worth the effort. Okay. Let's stop. We're right here in verse 16, so we'll come back to that Thursday night. And I think we should be able to finish Thursday night, have our review Thursday night, which means when we come back next week on Tuesday, we'll have our test, okay?
Test on it?
Yeah. Oh, is the tape still running? I hope that's on there. That's good. She's a merchant ship, not a battleship.
You look that up.